Good evening, this is Frank Knight. May I introduce our co-editors for this edition of the Longines Chronoscope? Colonel Ansel Talbert, one of the editors of the New York Herald Tribune, and Mr. William Bradford Huey, editor of the American Mercury. Our distinguished guest for this evening is Mr. Henry Wallace, former Vice President of the United States. The opinions expressed are necessarily those of the speakers.
Mr. Wallace, you, of course, are one of the most controversial political figures of our time. And I believe one of the most controversial points that you've ever advocated was American spending, large-scale American spending abroad. Now, when did you begin advocating this program, sir?
Sometime in 1941, and in a rather extensive way in 1942.
And you were a real pioneer in that field. You were one of the first Americans to so advocate that spending, weren't you?
I was so recognized at that time.
And you were bitterly assailed. I believe that was referred to as globaloney and as the building of TVAs on the Danube and other such...
Milk for Hottentots and so forth. I'm very proud of the names that were called at that time because... Those names caused the people really to remember that I stood for what is now looked on increasingly as a very enlightened program.
Well, now, it's been 10 years now since you began that advocacy, sir. And tonight, I'm sure that our Chronoscope audience would like to know exactly what you think now about that program. And specifically, what do you regard as the most critical areas in the world today?
Well, today, the most critical areas, in my opinion, comprise the Mohammedan world, extending from French Morocco on the west, all the way across to the southern part of the Philippines, and including also the Hindu world. And in addition, I would say South Korea, because it seems to me of absolutely vital importance if we wish to gain the sympathy of the peoples of Asia and the Near East, that we do a real job for the South Koreans as soon as the war comes to an end. If we don't do that real job to rehabilitate them, we will lose face even more decisively than we would lose if we lost the war in Korea.
Well, Mr. Wallace, do you think the American people have gotten their money's worth out of this spending?
Which spending are you referring to, sir?
The foreign aid, which has been extended rather lavishly in the past 8 or 9 years.
Are you referring particularly to the Marshall Plan and
yes.
in Europe then?
And
well, I think undoubtedly there have been some waste motion in the expenditure of the Marshall Plan aid, but it would seem to me to have contributed maybe 20% to the increase in production that has taken place. That's a rough figure, but it's brought about a very substantial increase.
Yeah.
Now, how about our armaments program, Mr. Wallace? You've been called a man of peace. Do you think our current armaments program is justified in the cost which it is imposing on the American people?
Well, the situation as it has developed, and I regret that it developed in this way, and I don't think it need to have developed in this way, but with it having developed in this way, we did have to go ahead with a very substantial armaments program. My contention today is that we take perhaps 1% of this oncoming armaments program of perhaps $60 billion a year and devote that 1% to a peace budget. I think we ought to have a peace budget going along with our war budget and the peace budget gradually growing stronger as the war budget can be reduced.
Now, sir, you have said that the critical areas are the areas around the Iron Curtain, particularly the displaced Arabs. And what would you have us do now, sir, in those critical areas? Specifically in for the displaced Arabs?
Well, this report of a committee that was recently made seemed to me to be singularly enlightened. First, of course, there are the immediate needs of these displaced Arabs, but far more important than that, the long-time needs, which have to do with the resettlement of these Arabs by providing adequate irrigation in that part of the world, which at one time had the most significant irrigation systems in the entire world.
Now,
in the Tigris-Euphrates River valleys, you remember that Abraham came out of Ur of the Chaldees, I suppose somewhere in Iraq, It was a marvelously fertile, civilized area at one time and can be made so again. And these displaced Arabs, if we will step in decisively and vigorously to help them, can do a genuine job. And in the process of doing that also, we can make the position of Israel more tenable.
Now, do you advocate this, sir, purely for humanitarian motivations?
No, not purely for humanitarian, although I have observed this, that pure humanitarianism always has its economic aspects. Genuine humanitarianism pays.
Well, now,
how
can it pay the United States other than just doing a good turn if we step in there and help those people to a higher standard of living? Can it help us in our war against communism?
Definitely. It makes all the difference in the world in our war against communism. To show that we can do for them what communism cannot do. The communists always promise land. Of course, actually, after the land has been given, they'll charge a higher rent than was formerly charged by the landlords. We can do a real job in seeing that these displaced Arabs have land, working in cooperation with the respective governments, seeing that they have the dams are constructed, irrigation canals dug, water made available, always having the local government, however, contribute its part as well. And most of these governments do have income because of oil.
If we do that for them, do you think that will make them prefer us to what Russia has to offer?
If we really understand them, if we develop an extension system in their terms, similar to the extension system which we learned how to develop for our farmers in their terms.
How about the Far Eastern situation, Mr. Wallace? Can we do anything in the Far East until we have stabilized the military situation?
In the Far East?
In the Far East, in Korea, for example.
No, we first have to wind up this Korean War, and I realize that that is a difficult problem, but I think that's off to one side. I wouldn't care to get in on that. I merely want to say that after the war is over, that we should start on a very vigorous peace offensive in Korea. That is, by a peace offensive, doing a real job for the Korean farmers.
Now, Mr. Norman Thomas on this show recently said that as soon as peace comes, we must step up government expenditures, even larger expenditures, more taxes than we are now levying. Now, do you share that view, sir? Do you believe that we should have more taxes, more government money, and then an equal amount spent to what we are now spending for military activities?
I would want this peace budget to come in as a part of the reduction of the military budget, but with the total budget being, of all kinds, being less and less. Now, I realize that that may be difficult as long as the world is in crisis, and I don't think anyone can make an absolute statement as to just what percentage of our income can be spent on taxes and our capitalistic economy survive. I don't think anybody can state that with any finality. It depends on the crisis and the temper of the people. If the people feel that they're in very grave danger, then the changes can be, then the taxes can be borne. But I certainly would hope that we could have a much smaller proportion of our income going for taxes than at the present time.
Well, Mr. Wallace, we've been discussing what we might do when peace comes. How does the situation for peace look to you right now? Peace in Korea, some sort of settlement with the communists in Russia?
I don't think anyone can say right now.
It doesn't look very hopeful, does it?
Well, I have this feeling that in this kind of a situation, that the situation is most hopeful when it looks least hopeful.
Mr. Wallace, as a final question, sir, you've always been a man who your critics conceded wished mankind well. And at the end of the year, we'd like to know, and our audience would like to know, if you see anything hopeful for 1952, sir.
Yes, I see a great eagle that is hopeful as we come to the end of this year. I believe the people of the United States are closer to facing the real facts, that force is not the ultimate arbiter, that ideas are the ultimate arbiter, that there is such a thing as carrying out the ideals of Jesus, that you can go forth into all the world and preach the gospel of what a real democracy means, the gospel to every living creature, that Jesus did come that we might all have life and have it more abundantly, and that that can be implemented with what we have, and that that ideal, which means so much to humanity, cannot be carried out with what the communists have, but with what we have, if we really mean it, if we put our technology to work in that spirit in an understanding way, in terms of these people that are producing only 1/20th as much as we're producing, who want to enjoy the good things of life, who have a right to the good things of life, and can produce twice as much within 10 years as they're producing today.
Well, sir, I'm sure that our audience very much appreciates your views tonight, and thank you for being with us, sir.